Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms for Life podcast, where each week we talk about four rhythms that help you reduce stress and anxiety and take charge of your emotional health. Rest, restore, connect, create. Welcome back. I'm Rebecca.
Hi, I'm Gabe Lyons. Welcome to Rhythms for Life and the Say Yes series brought to you by AIM.
November is here.
That's right. Leaves are falling outside our studio
cold.
Here in Franklin.
And cold.
It was 30 degree.
It dropped fast. Day.
I've been out hunting, actually. So
you basically are just sitting out in the cold all day long.
No, yesterday was 7 hours in the woods. I saw not one animal except squirrels that were really annoying. But this was really
Did you feel
amazing.
Close to God, though?
Was I know a lot of the women like listening are like his beauty? Offended at this point. But I will say, I saw a rock, a boulder that was like maybe 6 inches round.
Uh-huh.
It just moved, like it rolled
okay.
down on the floor of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing touched it. It just rolled over. And I wondered, how many thousands of years did it take for that rock
to
get
to
the point that it could roll? And I witnessed it.
Look at you. That's what you think about when you've been sitting outside for 7 hours.
Jack Handy.
Oh, wow. You're like, what was the revelation for today? Well, I watched a rock roll.
Rock and roll, baby. All right. Sorry, guys.
It's true, though. Like, you're driving out west, right? And you're driving on the highway, and all of a sudden, there's like an avalanche. You're like, "What? How long did it take for that to happen?
Right.
I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Right. It wasn't even windy.
It's not like the wind would have rolled the boulder anyways.
It's like the laws of gravity.
It's the foundation shifting.
So this is really about natural law.
Okay.
And that's what we're talking about today on this episode of Rhythms for Life.
Yes.
Outside of that. Back on track here.
Outside of that, let's talk, when is it appropriate to put your Christmas tree up?
Yes.
That's my next.
We would love to hear from you guys because last year was, I believe
election
it was
night.
Election night. So it was probably
November 3rd. I remember it vividly. We needed some cheer. I said we are putting
our
tree up.
Last year a lot of people did that.
Yeah. We were home all year. We couldn't wait to do something exciting. Yeah.
But now it's mid-November and our tree still is not up, which I think, does that mean this was a better year?
I don't know. I think we've had a lot on our plate. We were
hunting.
A little more. Yeah, you had a lot on your plate this week, distracted from tree trimming. I did get a text, though, from a girlfriend last night, and she has it all up. Like, she even has wreaths on the back of every bar stool, every chair around the table.
Oh, that stresses me out.
Yeah. But we are the kind that does it before Thanksgiving
because
typically we travel to Florida, which we are doing this year. And can I just say very quickly, the Joy is going to go to Disney World for the first time in her life and her head will explode. And we're very, very excited. We're very excited.
She will.
That's our Thanksgiving extravaganza.
It's one of Kate's favorite places on earth. And I know some of you out there just can't stand Disney. Others of you love Disney. But if you could see Kate's face going down Splash Mountain, you would not be able to resist taking him
and,
to Disney
and Splash
World.
Mountain is
and
now
it's been
changing.
A long time. We haven't been in a while. So
yeah.
He's going to be kind of in shock himself.
I know. We're very thrilled. The cousins are coming. It's just going to be a whole thing. Like the littles. And we're just going to pretend like Kate and Joy and Kennedy or Pierce and Kennedy are little again. And we're going to drag them around with us too. So anyways, you all didn't ask for all that, but I am curious about trees. But you guys can talk about that amongst yourselves.
And how long to leave them up, because we did not take our tree down till March 1st. So this is
okay.
And that's never happened before in our life.
I feel like we need a little more context. So I write about in Rhythms how I had seasonal affective disorder in Atlanta. And we moved to New York. I started walking, getting outside. Yeah, it's just like you're kind of have Blue Monday. You have depression-ish things in cold, hard days that, you know, for where we live, it gets dark at 4:30 and we don't have a lot of street lights. So the tree becomes this warm glow of happiness that just is always on for 4 months through the winter. So that's the story. I'm sticking with it.
And it was good. And I don't know that we'll do that again this year, but we don't mind it. We think, hey, go with it. If that makes your home feel more warm and cozy in the wintertime, there's no reason not to.
I remember the end of January going, it must come down. And then February blowed by. And then all of a sudden by March, I was like, no, really, it needs to come
well,
down.
Well, if you don't take your tree down, obviously it doesn't become special again the next time it's time to put it up. So
I think that's why it's not back up yet, because it's like, I think it's only been like 6 months since it's been down.
Rhythms for Christmas.
Yes. Okay. We have digressed quite a bit, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite rhythms and why I love to have a tree up by Thanksgiving is we host Friendsgiving every year. Gabe and I have been doing this for, goodness, I think about 5 years since we've been in Nashville, and it is so much fun. So we created a Friendsgiving guide at RebeccaLyons.com/Friendsgiving, and it's got conversation starters, questions, grateful lists, scripture around gratitude, a menu, a holiday menu, which is amazing. Some of my favorite ways to make all the sides. And then the turkey is tried and true. It started with Martha Stewart, and then Gwyneth Paltrow did like a smaller version of it, and I have done it every year, and it is amazing. And I don't call myself a turkey expert, but this one is foolproof. So if you want to download RebeccaLyons.com/Friendsgiving, go ahead and host that maybe in your small group, or maybe you do Thanksgiving in two different areas with certain parts of family, but it's definitely a way for you to have some resources to do that. But today on our podcast, we're having a conversation with Lisa Whittle about her book called The Hard Good. And the reason why I resonate so much with this content, this topic, is that it's all about waiting in the longing, and being in difficult situations and having to accept those difficult situations, and then also asking God to do a work in the middle of it. And I think that's been our journey for a lot of us this last year and a half in particular, of just sitting in the tension of things not being fully resolved or not knowing where things are exactly going. And that's impacted marriages, that's impacted family, that's impacted careers, it's impacted health. So I think you're going to be very encouraged by this conversation of how our posture can be before the Lord in the waiting. Lisa, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, friend. I'm so glad to be here.
I am too.
Yeah.
I think you do so much in the area of diligence, and you've got a lot in your life. I mean, we were just talking offline before this began. Tell us the big hallmarks that just happened.
Gracious. I'm like, what in the world? I feel like, I don't even know where to start. My son got married. I just dropped off my daughter at college.
Yeah.
We also remodeled our house.
Oh, you didn't even talk about that.
No,
you didn't mention. That's a big thing. Was it kind of like where you remodel the kitchen, but you still have to eat there? What kind of remodel are we talking about?
We're talking about gutted.
No. Mm-hmm. Did you live there?
No.
No.
That was the only thing. We were in a rental house. So we were going to build a house and had the house plans and all. And then, you know, there was this thing called COVID that happened.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then lumber went up quite a bit. And so we said, we're going to abandon that plan. And we bought a house built in 1970. And we gutted it.
Wow. And how long did that take?
It took, it took probably 6 months. It took a lot longer than we thought it would. It would take three.
Okay. Always double.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Right.
Just know, whatever they say, multiply by two.
You're right. Yep, exactly.
Do you love it?
I love it. We love it. But it took an adjustment because we scaled way down. So we had a house that we raised our kids in. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that anymore. I didn't want to clean it.
Yeah, so, I hear you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So a lot smaller house.
You know, I feel like as we gracefully age, less is more.
Thank you for that.
In all of the ways. In every possible category. I'm like, do we even need more than four pairs of shoes, honestly?
I am with you on that, and I feel it so hard.
Yeah. I feel like a win for me is a daily trip to Goodwill.
Oh.
Not to buy, but to leap.
Drop off?
Yes, to drop off. Because here's what my kids do. They'll be like, oh, I just brought home this like bin of clothes. Because, you know, teens like to thrift.
Right.
I just brought home this bin of clothes from Goodwill that I bought for like $3. And I was like, well, that's sweet. Because go ahead and put it back in the car. Because the minute you leave for college, mom is dropping it back off. I mean, Pierce came home one day and I promise you, it was worth the $5 of the entertainment. Because he did a fashion show. And he just came out in like the most random, hilarious outfits. And I was like, yeah, go ahead and leave that in the garage when we're ready to take you to college.
Yeah,
so Goodwill. Absolutely. Goodwill is nice entertainment for us. Hey friends, as you know, we are partnering with Agape International Missions to launch A Surrendered Yes into the world. This book is meant to serve as a guide to let go and live free. And so much of this journey starts with simply saying yes. You know, it's a beautiful gift when we find freedom. I know the feeling well, and I thank God for my story of letting go and living free. It's truly been life-changing. But I also believe that my freedom isn't just for me, because here's what I know, freedom is contagious. My freedom helps set others free. I can't think of a more tangible and actionable way to step in and say yes to sharing my freedom than by helping with the work that AIM is doing. For the last 16 years, they've been literally helping set others free. You see, they are on the ground rescuing girls from trafficking and empowering them to live free. This looks like actually rescuing people from dark situations, providing a restoration home where counseling and a journey of healing takes place, and protecting them from future exploitation by offering job training and safe employment opportunities. It's an incredible work, and I want to invite you into it. Right now, go to aimfree.org/sayyes and sign up for The Village. This is AIM's passionate community of monthly donors committed to ending the evil of trafficking one story at a time. And here's the fun part. When you join today, we'll send you a signed copy of A Surrendered Yes, my new devotional. Again, go to aimfree.org/sayyes. You'll even be able to watch a video where I share my heart for this partnership a little bit more. Let's say yes to freedom, and let's share that freedom with others. Okay, so you wrote a book, The Hard Good. Mm-hmm. I mean, what in the world? The subtitle is Showing Up for God to Work in You When You Want to Shut Down. When do you not want to shut down?
Yeah.
That's my big question.
Well, I mean, I think, well, for me, historically, I've wanted to shut down for most of my life, honestly, Rebecca. So I can talk about this topic very easily because I'm a person who likes things on my terms. I can admit that. And so I'm this weird sort of juxtaposition of a person who's very strong, but also a person who likes to run away if I don't like something or it feels uncomfortable. So I think a lot of people, especially now, there's this real pull to wanting to shut down.
Yes. So what makes you want to shut down? You're saying because it's hard and uncomfortable? Or are there specific factors that, like certain triggers,
yeah,
that you can kind of point to now that you've had this journey in the past? What are the essentials? What are those triggers?
Yeah. I think when things get hard, certainly just as a whole, that could be true, although I'm also a person that is driven and pushes through. So I wouldn't say in every situation that's been me, right?
And how would you define hard? Like, what does hard mean for
you? Oh, man. I mean, I would say more uncomfortable would be the way, you know, especially spiritually, like when God has been wanting to work in me, I kind of call it mess with me. You know, mm-hmm. I've wanted to say, no, God, you know, not this, don't touch this or whatever. If it felt like it was going to be something that was going to require emotionally out of me, because I'm a person who can sort of plow through as long as I don't have to tap into that deep place.
Okay.
We can get into Enneagram stuff if you want. No.
What do you type?
Eight. I'm an eight Enneagram. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but I think too, There's certainly triggers. You know, I think because I've had wounding in the church in the past, because my father was a pastor, had a very large public ministry fall. You know, there have been triggers with church triggers maybe, or relationship triggers, I think, sometimes as well. So any of those things could be true.
Yeah. The uncomfortable. I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It is so interesting how different personalities navigate. Like, I'm like, yeah, let's get uncomfortable.
Really?
I'm fine with that. Yeah. I think for me, it's more of hard for me looks like legit actual fatigue.
Okay.
You know, and I think, do you struggle with sleep? Have you ever?
I haven't until I hit menopause.
Okay. It is a hormone thing. I hear a lot.
Yes.
Sorry, listeners. Yeah. We're going to have that mid-40s conversation.
Yeah.
I'll speak for myself. I'm mid-40s.
Yeah.
She's much younger than me, I'm sure.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But yes, I think how much our moods, our worries, our kind of anxiety is triggered by hormones.
Yeah.
So I have found that sleep has come harder these last few years. I'm trying to very diligently pursue it and do all the right things and taking certain supplements and, you know, all of the things. But there is an overall sense sometimes, and I think a lot of people are feeling that right now, of just like, let's just shut down. And Do you think it's more than just exhaustion? Do you think it's avoidance?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think because things every day that are coming to us or even going on inside us feel heavy and taxing, I think that avoidance is one very clear way that we kind of get through, right? Mm-hmm. So we numb ourselves with things. We avoid hard conversations, partially because we don't have the confidence that we can have a hard conversation with someone and it not turn into a breakup or breakdown.
Sure.
Which is one of the reasons I talked about the importance of how to have even a tough conversation in the book, because, you know, we just don't even know how to do that anymore.
Right. And there's such a spirit of offense, like that we're so afraid that like someone would be so offended and hurt and insulted by a disagreement or seeing things differently.
Yeah.
That it really breaks relationship.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it's interesting you brought up offense. There was something else that I realized as I was writing this book is that a lot of us are offended by our life. By our own life. And so we're offended by other people, but we're also offended by our life because we just kind of constantly stay in this place where we're saying over and over again, I cannot believe that happened. Whether it is a loss or whether it is, you know, even COVID.
Yeah.
You know, I can't believe that happened. I can't believe that's happening again. People are, you know, we're facing that right now, right? And it's like we're offended. We're offended by our life. We're offended by God, you know, by these how these things could happen. So we get into like this cycle of offense and we become stuck and all of those kinds of things. And that can lead to shutdown too.
Yeah, I think one of the phrases, is, you know, I've heard it a lot is, I didn't ask for this, you know. This kind of like, sorry, God, there are things that you're allowed to do and there are things you are not. And I do think sometimes that can create a little bit of a hardening of maybe a deep-rooted, like slow burn of resentment. How do you find that if we're offended by our lives, then typically we're going to be offended by somebody else's.
Yeah.
You're right. Take offense to how somebody exudes a response that looks different than ours, and whether it's envy or we're just critical of them or whatever.
Yeah.
How do you see that showing up online and kind of pervading the church? Let's talk about the church.
Let's talk about it. I mean, I think there's different things at play. One of the things I felt was really important to talk about right from the beginning was to even define what good was. Because, Rebecca, we have sort of bought into culture's idea of what good is, and it's made us live in a constant state of criticism of even ourselves or other people or comparison. Like, well, I don't have the good life that they do. Maybe I did something wrong, or why does God show them more favor, or whatever the case may be. And so I had to kind of talk to us about what is actually good. Otherwise, we don't know what we're going for here, right? Because we don't need to define what hard is.
Right.
But what is hard good that leads to good? And that's why the things in the book are not just hard things we go through, but they are things that are spiritually transformative if we will allow God to shape us in the uncomfortable. And that's the whole point of why should I show up instead of shut down? Well, it is because what God can do through those tough things. Yeah.
Let's talk about your dad.
Okay.
You said that this was 1,825 days from when you, I'm not smart enough right now, this time of the day. How many years ago did your dad pass?
He died in 2017.
Okay. So my dad was a year later. Yeah. I remember us having this conversation.
Same month, I think. Right? Mm-hmm. April?
Yep. April. Yep. Was that kind of the genesis of this? Like, can you point back to seasons of your life where like that was my first hard good?
You know, that's a great question. I think when I look back at my life, that God has been trying to shape me in this process of hard good for a lot of my life. Honestly, Rebecca, I think 2017, I kind of got language for it.
Wow.
When Dad died, it was really clear to me that the Lord wanted me to talk about it. And it was kind of like this. I had a front row seat to watching a man who, you know, was a pastor. He was someone who was really, really gifted, but he also wrestled a lot. He struggled. And it was like the front row seat to a man's struggle. And I felt like the Lord was challenging me, Lisa, what are you going to do with what you know, with the information that you have?
Yeah.
And it was, how are you going to talk about this uncomfortable process and what I can do and what happens when you run away or when you stay? And it was my own life too. You know, I was a lot like my father, and that scared me in many ways, Rebecca, because, you know, my father had, like I said, this big public ministry fall. And
how old were you?
I was in my early 20s, which is a really transformative time.
Do you feel like you processed it?
Yeah, I definitely did. I processed it with really good counseling, which I'm very, very thankful for. But it made me have a lot of questions. I'm a question asker anyway.
Sure.
But it made me say things like, you know, why does the church hurt you? Can someone who is a minister of the gospel, can they be real if they're gifted? It made me ask hard questions of the church, honestly. And it made me ask hard questions of faith in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a real moment there of one way or the other, I think. And I clung to my faith. I clung to God. But that's not to say I didn't wrestle.
Would you say that was your first one then at 20? Like where you're consciously going, I was able to receive it for what it was. I didn't, because you were old enough to process it. You're old enough. Because I think sometimes we all, like you said, we probably had a ton of hard, good moments.
Yeah.
But it's the more of the ability to notice and recognize them.
Yeah.
And even sit in them.
Yes. Yes, I definitely think so. I think it's interesting too, because it was so tied to my father, and this book is tied to my father.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how many years later, it's kind of full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What has been hard, good in your parenting, in your motherhood?
Oh man, we could talk about that for a while.
You're like, which kid do you want to start with?
Yeah. Oh man, Rebecca, I think hard, good for me in my parenting has been a death to self.
Yeah.
Of just, you know, I think selfishness for me in my parenting had to go quickly, like it does for all parents. I think also releasing fear, a lot of fear.
Fear of what as a mom?
Oh, well, certainly I could start with things like fears that I would not do it well.
Sure.
But then also I could go to the biggest one of fear that they would die. You know? Yeah. I mean, I think I still have that fear. I've just known too many parents who have lived through that.
Yeah.
And you know, God, that makes me choke up, you know, because
did you witness that at a young age? Somebody you knew?
No, but I've just walked through that with close friends.
Wow.
And when you walk through things like that with people, you cannot deny anymore that that can be a reality, that that can be your reality. And I just don't live my life with my head buried in the sand. And so I know every day I'm just real aware of hard in this world, you know?
Yeah. Well, kudos to you, because like you were saying, as one who might type as an eight, it is easy to just stay in the lane of like, get her done.
Yeah.
Up and to the right and champion that.
Yeah.
And to really have to, you're just exhibiting so much empathy talking about your friends, and it is the hard that softens us.
Yeah.
That slows us, that softens us, that awakens us to the goodness, right? If we let it.
That's the key.
That's a caveat, because it can grow bitter. It can definitely become resentment and separation and our view of God or our view of other people. But what are the things that helped you stay tender in that kind of grief?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think my unsuccess at running away, I think that certainly has kept me in the pocket. You know, I
like God's just not letting you.
God
out
just
of his
has
reach.
Not let me go, which is why I love him so much. His very, very, his tenacity to continue just to draw me in has been wild and unrelenting my whole life.
What does that look like in your everyday interactions? Like, give us a little bird's eye view of like, what is your kind of intimacy? Not, I mean, that might be asking overreaching, but like, some people still feel like this relationship with God is a little abstract. It's kind of out there and it's ethereal.
Yeah.
But what tangibly embodied experience does that look like for you?
You know, for me, it is really a personal friendship that I, you know, I was thinking about this the other day as I was driving in my car and I was singing this song, The Goodness of God. I've known you as a father. I've known you as a friend. Like the things I do today, even, you know, writing books or traveling or whatever, it's so not me. I like to stay home. I like to just kind of bunker down. You know, as a child, I was so shy, I would like crawl under the table so people wouldn't talk to me. And so when I think about what my life is like, I think about God and I doing it together. I think about every time I roll a suitcase into a hotel room in a random city and the fact that in and of Lisa's self, she would never do this. There just forms an intimacy. So I think it has been just a combination of God not letting me get away, me saying yes, the surrendered yes, right?
That's good.
And watching him be enough and us just doing this life together.
I really do feel that.
Yeah.
I think it's so sweet to hear people talk about that sweetness of that relationship. It's just not this kind of, you know, unapproachable place or like you got to get it right and come perfect. It's the opposite. It's very much the broken, just like, here I am.
Yeah.
And you love me and I feel that love. I would love to ask you one. I forgot to ask you earlier, what is the good heart? I think this is very poignant right now, but what is the good heart in marriage?
A hard good in marriage. Oh man, it is. It has been staying in every regard. It has been staying and watching it continue to grow. I honestly, Rebecca, this is one area I will tell you right now. I am amazed that I'm still married after 26 years.
Wow.
Because I never thought I could do it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I just, listen, all praise be to God and my very, very persistent husband, because I am such an independent soul and very rough around the edges that I marvel at marriage. I really do. And I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. And I'm just grateful. It has been hard and it has been so good to know that I can do it. I can stay faithful. I can experience life with a partner, and we can keep going.
Yeah.
And that has been hard, and it has been good.
Yeah. I love that you talked to that, because there is such a thrust of independence among women, which is beautiful. It's actually something to be celebrated that God, you know, is exposing and revealing to us these birthright gifts and these passions and these pursuits. The problem is sometimes there's a quote that I feel like I heard and I keep asking people. I said, just that God never calls us to things that ask us to abandon family.
Yeah.
But yet, in the zeal, it feels like, well, this could be easier without, or this could be more on mission without. And I think it's a lie.
Yeah.
That it's the actual practice of having to stay in relationship that sanctifies and purifies and hones those rough edges. That's sometimes the hardest.
Yes.
Because that person sees everything. All those things are exposed. Could you speak to when you said the word stay? I think whatever the heart is,
yeah.
I mean, the temptation is always to run.
Oh, always.
Yes.
You know, I think this is what's interesting. I think we want the seasoned life, but we don't want the seasoning. And so for most of us, whatever it is, staying is part of that seasoning, right? I mean, it's it would be so much easier in so many cases just to get out of something. And I think we live in a culture that lets people off the hook. I I love it. What is that quote, or it's a meme or something that's like, my favorite thing is when someone cancels on me. I don't know, I'm butchering it, but it's like, it's if you're an introvert, you love it when people cancel plans, right?
I'm sorry, I'm late. I didn't want to come.
Yeah, it's something like that. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Thank you. So it's that kind of thing. And I get it. We're all busy. I think grace for each other is amazing. But the reality is we do live in a culture where everyone sort of expects from each other that we're not going to show up. You know what I mean? I think that it always surprises me when someone actually does what they say they're going to do.
Isn't that crazy?
Right? Or they, you know, show up for something. I'm like, oh, I'm so grateful you kept our coffee date or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I'm always proud of myself when I keep a coffee date, right. You know? Let me not be judgmental here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is the thing. I have learned far more in my life from sitting through the uncomfortable process of spiritual transformation with God.
Yeah.
That is what the hard good is about. This is not just about, okay, let's just talk about hard things. I'm sorry. That's not a book I want to read.
Yeah.
It is about this process of these things that profoundly change us and not only make us more kingdom usable, which is really important, because if I'm going to be down here and I'm going to go through hard things, which if you believe the Bible, you believe that will happen, mm-hmm. I want them to count for something, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But also it changes us in our own confidence and our decision-making and our perspective and all these things. Because if you look at people that you greatly admire by the way that they handle life, it's not because they're just more gifted or more special, or certainly they're not sovereign, because there's only one of those.
Right.
They have a faith muscle that's been exercised.
Yes, I agree.
And it's through these kinds of things.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And I love that you speak to the pruning, right? Really what we're like, pruned and pure and purified. Or the verse I can't stop quoting, especially around this theme of saying yes or surrendering. It's just the act of surrender. It's that suffering produces character. So suffering, endurance, character, and character, hope. Mm. Like that, the actual heart of the suffering. I mean, Jesus constantly is like, hey, you're no longer fearful slaves. You're sons and daughters of God. That's why you get to share in the inheritance. And you also get to share in my suffering. And we're like, no, let's just share in the inheritance.
I don't love that part.
He goes, well, part of my inheritance is death, burial, and resurrection life.
Yeah.
You want the resurrection life, but you don't really want the death, but you can't. Like, it precedes resurrection life. And how would you encourage the listener that the hard indeed leads to good, or that pain indeed leads to purpose? Mm. Like, that passion, the root word of passion, means to suffer.
Yeah.
Why do we try to skip that? I mean, I know why we skip it, but what would you say to the person who's sitting in their hard right now and they want to run? They actually are like, I've sat here, you know, maybe it's the pandemic. I've sat here for 18 months and I'm done. I'm out. If I've ever wanted to run from my marriage, it's now. Or if I ever wanted to run from my role as a mother, it's now. If I ever wanted to run from a relationship or a work or whatever, we don't get a free pass. So besides them hearing just like that, what would you encourage them with in the stay?
Well, I would say this. I would say, you know, that God in his very nature is good. We can gloss over that, but it is really the truth. And so anything that draws us to good God is going to be good for us. And that's super hard when we're in the middle of a furnace. I get it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that it's not true.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have taken so much comfort from the fact that if I believe the Bible, which I do, then I know that one day there will be no more tears, there will be no more pain, there will be no more hard. And the reason why this book is called The Hard Good and not The Good Hard is because it doesn't end with hard.
Yeah.
It ends with good.
I love that.
And if you know Jesus, you will be okay. And that's a promise from Scripture. And so I know that in this moment it's so difficult, but this is not the good life. Mm. This is not it. Mm. And so we will get there.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, what is the yes that changed the trajectory of your life?
I think one of the big yeses was in 2012, I really wanted to quit. Mm. I wanted to quit writing and speaking. And so it was a yes in that moment to keep going.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. What is the yes that changed your everyday?
The yes that changes my everyday is the yes to continue to sit in that uncomfortable process with God of spiritual transformation. I mean, that really is my current yes, and it's probably going to be my future yes, because that's just kind of where I am.
Oh, I love that. I do think that when in those moments where I need him so much, and there is that desperate cry for like, be my peace, be my joy, be my light, be my strength, be my shield. Like, why would we go anywhere else? You know? Like, let's just hang in that space.
There is nowhere else to go.
And when it's hard, we know he is that for us on our behalf. So we can just receive from that and place ourselves in that posture of submission and surrender to that. So thank you for being here. And I love watching your life and you live this out in such faithful ways. And I'm glad you didn't stop writing a decade ago, or we would not have this book.
Thanks, friend.
That was a lovely conversation and deep and so helpful. I loved how y'all began talking about the hard things. And sometimes we have the option to avoid these things, mm-hmm. or we can kind of lean into them. And we don't just want to escape the hard conversations.
Right.
And all of the things you guys talked about, there's so much growth that God has for us in the midst of that.
Yeah, I definitely think so. It's easier to avoid a lot of times when reconciliation is really needed and necessary in, you know, intimate relationships, in friend groups, in family of origin, nuclear family, whatever that looks like, it's easier to avoid. And I think the challenge here is like, while we make peace with things we can't change, we definitely lean into the things that God is inviting us to actually be reconciled.
Yeah.
And that's very important because I think our inner life, our intimacy with God is so deeply impacted by how we are walking through tension and how we are embracing maybe even the uncomfortableness of it, knowing that the humility and the kindness is truly to be reconciled, not first to God, but also to one another.
Yeah, I think in general, in November, we want to be grateful, and it's that season we're coming into of just gratitude, and that's one of the first steps we can always take when we're going through something difficult, is to take different perspective, give thanks for all the good things in our life, as well as some of these challenges that we know might not feel good in the moment, but God will use to help bring us around to healthier, to more sanctified, to more like Him.